The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. The more you know about our meat, the better. That's the bottom line at Whole Foods Market. Our standards require no added hormones and no antibiotics, ever. Our partnerships with farmers and ranchers allow us to offer the highest quality local and organic choices. And our newest program, the Global Animal Partnership's 5-step animal welfare rating, sets unprecedented standards in the industry for beef, pork, and chicken. Standards you can see, labeled, when you walk into our stores. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more information on the 5-step rating, because hey, the more you know, the better.
RadioNetwork.com. Burning down the house here, 20th March 2011. Happy spring. Spring has sprung here in the Elysian fields of Brooklyn. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, architect, your host and guide to our world of everything related to design, architecture, and the creative arts. Joining us in studio today is Architect of New York, Jacob Allspector, friend of the station. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here on this beautiful spring day. It's great when you get that, you know, equinox things going.
did you balance an egg on its end?
Set our orientations today, you know, with all our projects, you know.
That's right.
If we knew local noon and all that stuff.
And all our fees go up. Yes.
Yeah. Happy springtime, everyone.
Yeah. One of the things that you last attempted to communicate to us was you had some things to say about libraries when we were having a conversation with architect duo Dickinson a while back. You were listening and you tried to call in. And,
that's right. I was frustrated by your lack of technical prowess. I mean, everybody calls in. I mean, what fun is it not to be able to call in?
I know.
Yeah. Anyway.
So to make it right, here you are.
Here I am.
In Studio A of Heritage Radio Network.
Long phone call this will be. Like the old days, right?
Operator, I'm calling long distance. What's that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, how many minutes is that off of your plan? Libraries.
Yeah.
Are they a thing of the past, or in this digital information age, do they have a new life, a different life? I mean, that is the that's a question that you wanted to talk about when Duo was bad mouthing the expenditure of some millions of dollars for library expansion, I think, over there in Eastern Connecticut. And I know that you feel very passionate about libraries. That's one of the main areas of expertise that you have in your practice.
Yeah, and I've seen and done all kinds, from little scale, branch libraries all the way up to mega megas,
yeah. And we'll talk about all the different aspects of those projects.
Yeah, I love them and I hate them. Actually, I love them mostly. I've always loved them since I was a kid. So it's really odd, not at all odd that I enjoy it, but odd that I got the opportunity to do it. It's cool.
I want to tell a little story. There's something really lacking about the Google Book experience. You know that project of digitizing
the world,
the world. Every
eventually
important book.
You'll do it.
Right. Well, okay. So one of our favorite books, The Six Discourses by Eugène Viollet-le-Duc.
Oh, that one. The one that you found online for me.
Thank you. Well, so Google has digitized the copy that I found in the stacks.
How about that?
At Francis Loeb Library at the Harvard GSD, the Graduate School of Design. And I found it just by accident. I was looking for something.
See, that's browsing. And they try to simulate browsing. Like Amazon does it for you, you know, when you go to buy something.
Well, if you like this.
If you like, or people who looked at this also looked at this. I mean, it's a form of browsing, but it's not the form of browsing that was set up by either Dewey Decimal or the other guy, you know, the Library of Congress
or whatever system you use. Like topics are not really that well organized in the Amazon picks.
Well, you can imagine. I mean, you know, knowledge is like a three-dimensional spectrum.
Yeah, but on Amazon, every time I go on there, they're suggesting that I should buy a book by Barbara Kinsolver. You know, the best-selling author.
Well, that's
who
what
wrote,
they're
you know,
obligated
all that
to have
stuff.
Because they're public libraries and they have to appeal to the taste of their constituents.
But there's. What I wanted to say is that there is something definitely lacking.
They love Barbara Kinsolver. God bless them. They'll get her.
Yeah. Don't distract me from my story. So there's something missing about discovering a book in the stacks. First of all, there's this smell of, you know, rotting books. Right. I was looking for some information on Paxton's Crystal Palace from the 1851 exhibition in London.
And that's when you came across this particular...
Viollet-le-Duc
thing.
Yeah, there was a guy...
And you never would have discovered him hadn't it been for that?
I knew about him, but I knew nothing about the Six Discourses.
But you wouldn't have actually looked at his...
No, there was a guide to the 1851 Crystal Palace exhibition on the shelf, which I was looking at because Crystal Palace gets us into curtain wall construction, right? Which, you know, all relates back to greenhouses.
Right? Yeah.
And right next to it was this other book with a lovely binding, Six Discourses, Viollet-le-Duc. And it's like, well, I knew about him because of his adaptive renovations of, like, Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris and things like and so I just opened it, and it fell open to his discussion of the decadence of style.
Yeah.
And that sort of random discovery that can happen in an actual physical library is very
It's countless stuff, you know. I mean, actually, my first kind of fascination and in-depth sort of exposure to architecture was that kind of serendipitous thing in a library. I used to go to my local little public branch at the Brooklyn Public Library.
I'm nodding my head yes.
He's nodding.
Go ahead.
And I would go there to escape the heat of the day because it was one of the few air-conditioned places other than the movie theater, which cost a quarter at the time. I'm dating myself.
Library in Arlington Heights, Illinois, wasn't air conditioned, but it was dehumidified. There were these big ass dehumidifiers.
Well, that's the same thing.
Yeah, and it was.
No, but that's the same thing, as you know.
I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the main component of air conditioning.
Is
dehumidification.
Pulling the water out, which gives us adiabatic cooling and all that kind of.
Well, anyway, also makes it more bearable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and, it doesn't matter what temperature it is, as long as it's kind of.
But I'll let you tell your story.
Oh, so.
But I'm nodding my head.
Yeah, so I would go, and actually, like any other boy growing up with Disney and the space program and the Cold War and, you know, all of that rah-rah-rah stuff and military, you know, who wasn't enthralled with space. And, you know,
You didn't love space?
Oh, of course I did. And I saw this book, which was a posthumous thing that Wright's widow had published on Frank Lloyd Wright.
Obviously it wasn't the first Wright wife.
No, it was this. It wasn't a Wright book. It was his widow's Wright book.
What's that?
Olga Varna. Yeah. And she wrote this book called Man, you know, Frank. And it had his quotations in it, of course. And his stuff. But it was like a love book to him, a kind of memorial. And there it was. And the cover was of Monona Terrace at night, that project on Wisconsin Lake that in Madison that, you know, glowed like sort of a constellation or a galaxy or something, right? It was one of Wright's night renderings, you know, that was so evocative, you know, kind of, you know, futuristic. So I was attracted to it. I pulled it down. I discovered architecture, and the rest, they say, is history.
How old were you?
I think I was 11 at the time. Yeah. Anyway.
Late bloomer.
But so libraries, you know, are really like, they're so intertwined with me. It's like I can't even talk objectively about it. So anymore,
well, that's okay. We can be partisan here. My feeling about libraries is that they are so deeply ingrained in our civilization. Almost every civilization. Thousands and thousands of, I mean, the library at Alexandria and Alexandria. And there were other libraries before that.
Yeah.
Whose names I cannot name, unfortunately, but that is the most famous library of antiquity.
Yep, yep.
That if there had there not been libraries, there are all kinds of bits of historical data that would have been lost. I mean, because if you don't collect them in one place, then because some monk somewhere has got, you know, a copy of a songbook from the 1600s. If that's not shared with other people, then things just would have been shared. Jack, if you could run track two. Here's a song that was preserved for 600 years.
All right.
He's quite a favorite around these parts, but my lips are sealed. Ha ha, if I could only tell you, ha ha. Who comes, who goes, who stays? If I did, you'd probably despair. Kind of elliptically smutty, I think it is. There's also a dance that goes with this, so those of you who know it, please join in. Do join in the chorus, won't you? Thank you.
Yes, they could rock back then. That was Richard Thompson playing So Ben Mi Ca Bon Tempo, which is a song that would have been lost had there not been those moldy old books in a library someplace.
Interesting. Yes, man, digital preservation. So welcome,
well, you know,
welcome to the outmoded media.
I found
What's the media of the month here?
You know, I found that. because our present day library in part is social media. So my good friend, the chef Erica Demain, found it.
Absolutely.
And she posted on her Facebook page. And it was like, oh, Richard Thompson is singing in medieval Italian, because she writes Italian cookbooks.
Right.
And so, so YouTube has become our digital library. How much preservation is going to happen
it
in
has,
that digital library?
But how
library?
How do you get to YouTube if you don't have the technology?
Well, you can't.
No, you can you have a public library.
Yeah, but if
but this is the point.
But if the
actually, it's the same point.
But if the grid goes down, this is all digital.
Well, we're all
stuff.
Screwed then. I didn't know if I could use more strong language on internet radio, but
we're fucked.
Basically,
if the worldwide net of electronics
as we knew
goes
from
down,
from the Y2K kind of scare. Everybody contemplated what would happen. It was too awful to contemplate. We went merrily on digitizing our lives.
How about Japan?
Do I sound like a Luddite?
Well, maybe. Yeah. No, how about Japan? I mean, they were...
You mean recently?
Tens of thousands of people who were unaccounted for because the phones didn't work in Sendai or near there in that prefecture of Japan just last week. Hmm. You know, I sit at work next to a lovely young Japanese woman whose grandmother was missing.
Oh, no.
She was at home. The phones didn't work.
Yeah.
So she was effectively dead to the outside world. And I asked her, aren't there people in her neighborhood who go around and check on the old folks? And she's, no. So if they're not electronically connected, they don't exist anymore.
Right.
It's not the world of sending letters by the mail and writing books and publishing them and putting them in libraries.
That had its own logical communication channel, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even remember how it was that we remembered to meet somebody at a certain time when we only had the mail.
It was not contingent. Everything's contingent now.
It's everything like I'll see you around such and such.
Provisional.
I don't even remember how that worked.
Well, at you the last minute, I just call you on my cell and I say, I'm sorry, I can't make it. Sorry, Curtis, I can't make talking about libraries. I'm sorry.
Back in the day, somehow we got places without the instant gratification of the digital connection.
We did. Now you're sounding like the old fart here, kind of.
For the record, I'm 58 years old.
Oh,
I was born when...
you are an old fart.
And you were, too, when Truman was president, and they made Packards.
Packards.
Wonderful vehicles. But...
You digress.
We're talking about libraries here on Burning Down the House, 20th March 2011, with Jake Allspector, brought to you by Whole Foods Market. We're in an information society.
Yeah.
Why should we still be building libraries when you can get everything on your home laptop, your office computer, your PDA, your smartphone? Everything is digitally connected. Why do we need libraries, Jake?
Well, you got to ask the people who want them because they keep building them.
Who wants libraries?
Well, and they're also changing a bit. To respond.
Well, what's your experience?
So like my remark about the access, that's a really important part of a library. It's always been, because there were always libraries, but it wasn't always accessible to the public. So you're talking about information.
Well, there are libraries, and then there are private libraries, and then there are society libraries.
Yes.
And university and college libraries.
Right.
We, as alumni...
But as you were talking about the access to the technology, a public library provides for that, not only physically, but also the training for it. So it's actually led the way in many respects to access to the internet world.
For people who are underserved.
For people who don't have the means. And there's many, 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 even in our own communities, about... A good, almost the majority of people don't have internet connections.
So they can go to the public library and they can look things up.
That's what they do. Or they have it on their phone devices, things.
Well, that's not a library thing. But do librarians, in your experience, teach people how to use their smartphones? Oh,
well, I don't know if they do that anymore, but they certainly were providing access to the internet browsers and how to do research online and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I inferred from your snarky remarks when you couldn't get through last time you tried to call in was that
they're making more books than ever.
They're not making more books
absolutely.
I hear that the book publishing business is in the gutter.
Well, maybe the traditional one, but the production of actual volumes of books has increased steadily, and
I'm gonna hold
the amount
you
of paper. No, I can
really
show you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you believe these things.
I've been trying to sell my book forever, and all these would-be agents keep telling me
that the book. If you give me a moment, I'll find the reference. But
well, that would be good.
It's here.
Oh, my God. Jake has come with 12 pages of reference notes printed on both sides.
I just did a little thing this morning.
I didn't realize you were one of those people, one of those guests who comes with.
The backside is Recycle Man. See, this is used paper.
Oh, the backside is...
I don't have a twin
is,
side. Printer at home.
Old specs from...
it's actually...
Okay, so what I understood was that in your experience, libraries are becoming more of a meeting place for people who are like-minded to talk about the things that they've looked at online.
Well, the thing...
A place for them to tell
to
each
chase.
Other what
yes,
they
exactly,
feel and they know.
You're getting a place, and the place means a place for human interchange, one-on-one, or in a community of sorts, whether it be a lecture, a reading room, just a place to be and be serious and to get away, or to also be social and serious, or to be casual. And in some cases, it's blending out into all this mixed-use stuff. But that's another phenomenon. But it's related. It's related to the sort of
Let's get back to the mixed-use stuff. Yeah.
But it's the community issue. It's the issue of having a community of scholars or of researchers or of people who are there curious about something and wanting to learn something. And you come to this place, which is a place of knowledge, and it's more like, in this day and age, it's going to become more and more like a media tech because so much of knowledge is going to be generated on media. And so the big task of the library is to also conserve access to that, because media keeps changing, and you can you access your floppy disks anymore?
No.
How about early internet pages, web pages,
where did they go? Right.
Yeah, well, actually works on this. Librarians do this stuff. Yeah. They have to.
No, there was
it's their job.
You're right. I mean, there was stuff that I had on my first Apple II floppy drive. And then there was stuff that I had on my first...
So in the old days, you didn't care.
IBM,
all you had to worry about was fire and flood, to destroy your record or
now
looting.
Now it's media changes, and the stuff doesn't get turned into hard copy, so we can't save it.
But it has to get turned into hard copy.
Or it has to get turned into some standard of digital format that we can actually...
continue to promulgate.
Read, and I mean, there's stuff that I've lost for, 25 years ago. It didn't get changed from one format to the next format to the next format. I didn't print it out, so I couldn't scan it now if I even had
it. It's gone.
It's totally gone.
It's gone. Well, you could probably find someone to do that particular thing. It would cost you a lot of money. Would have to have all the software, hardware. All the way back to that era.
I don't even have the diskettes.
But there are places that can serve that kind of stuff, believe it or not.
And they're in a way, kind of like an information society.
This is a little bit arcane. But what's happening is the internet world, because it's us and our screens, and then the rest of the universe through our screens. We don't really have direct human physical interaction, which is what we kind of all crave because of our biological ancestry, really.
Which is...
We're social animals. Yeah, we're social animals. And we've learned to exchange information along with interacting in many other ways in sort of an organic way. And to think that we could isolate that into a screen is strange.
No, it doesn't work. No, because, I mean, even at the most basic level, getting back to your story about going to the library because it was air-conditioned.
Right.
For my part...
It was a place of refuge.
Yeah, well, for my part...
It was a place.
For my part, I was 8.
I could chill there.
Yeah, I chilled too. And then I was 9.
I mean, literally and figuratively.
Of course. For myself, I had this summer when I was 9 turning 10... And the library was dehumidified, so it was cool. And I asked a librarian about, do you have books about electronics? And do you have books about architecture?
Right.
And I spent that entire golden summer reading this section of the book.
Electronics and architecture.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's got into those circuit diagrams, I take it.
I learned how to
I was into electronics, too. Actually.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah. But it was all about talking with an adult, of course, about...
Guys were a little... Everybody was nerdy in those days because...
We were all
nerdy.
To be
nerdy was very easy.
No, it was because there was no notion that it was okay to be...
dry cell batteries and wire them up with copper wire and do things like that.
Well, it was expected. Yeah. It was the Cold War era. The notion that it was okay to be a slacker was not okay.
Slacker hadn't been defined.
There was
filtered down.
There was Eddie Haskell.
Well, that's true.
Father knows best. Yeah. But it was all about, well, then as now, it was a place of interaction of what do you know? Can you direct me?
And librarians help you too.
And,
right?
And what do you. I know. My first wife was a librarian.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My daughters are daughters of a librarian.
Did she fit the sort of old stereotype, which, of course, is just a stereotype?
No, no. She was lively and fecund.
The one with the buns and the...
No. She bore me two beautiful daughters, and she was crazy girl. She would go with me to Fiorucci in New York and Chicago and hang out with... Warhol studio people.
All right.
She was a librarian. So it was all about, truly, it was all about being a place.
Where's that guitar? I feel a song coming on here. No, right just there. Kidding.
You could do the guitar in the next break. Yeah. Let's have a little bit of music from the Information Society, reframe our thoughts, and get back to why books are important.
I want to know what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I want to know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
We'll be right back. following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Naturalist every Monday at 12 p.m. Bernie Wides, a.k.a. The Naturalist, is a walking encyclopedia of history, biology, geography, and a whole host of other words ending in Y. The Naturalist is his platform to make you just a little bit smarter every week, covering an enormous breadth of topics from animal life to prehistoric New York. Let Bernie's dulcet voice and razor-sharp intellect guide you through 30 minutes of pure, unadulterated knowledge. Co-hosted by Carol Butler. Again, that's every Monday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
And now, on Burning Down the House, a word from Jack, our executive producer, about the trail of internet information. Hello, Jack.
Hello. Oh, wow, that's loud. Okay. See, I don't talk that much on the shows. So I thought I would make you guys aware of this internet archive, which can be found at archive.org. And on their website, they claim to be a 501c3 nonprofit founded to build an internet library. Its purposes include offering permanent access for researchers, historians, scholars, people with disabilities, and the general public to historical collections that exist in digital format. It was founded in 1996 in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And the archive has been receiving data donations from Alexa Internet and others. In 1999, the organization started to grow to include more well-rounded collections. Now the archive includes texts, audio, moving images, and software, as well as archived web pages in their collections, and provides specialized services for adaptive reading and information access for the blind and other persons with disabilities.
Cool.
Wow.
All right.
Wow. So we can find...
So maybe we are on that archive as we speak. Wouldn't that be interesting?
I don't think we're old enough to be on that archive.
Well,
I mean, they're still churning
through
all this.
Somebody's still collecting it.
Well, they're still churning through all those files that came off of Apple IIs and leases and IBM.
Cataloging is the key. How do you catalog an index?
Cataloging is the key. So,
I found this quote.
Well,
Curtis.
No.
I found the quote.
No.
No.
Wait.
Okay, go ahead.
Because we do replay these podcasts and in the loop of HRN After Hours. We are Burning Down the House. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, architect, your host on Heritage Radio Network, here with Jake Allspector.
Howdy, folks.
A library expert.
Uh-oh.
Yaha.
Well, design expert, not kind of. Any other kind of.
You can't design it if you don't know it.
Well,
right?
Gotta know it if you want to show it. Yeah, I agree.
Go on. So you had a quote.
Yeah, the quote.
Or a reference.
Which we spoke about. Well,
yeah.
No, you said, come on, how could more books be
I don't
printed?
Believe that more books are
well,
being printed.
Well, this is from the head librarian of Harvard University Libraries.
Yeah, well...
Printed in
we have to salute the flag.
The New York Review of Books.
Yeah.
On December 23rd, 2010. Just found this today.
Okay.
This morning. It says, despite financial pressure, we therefore, blah, blah, blah. This is all irrelevant, but he says, I have been invited to so many conferences on the death of the book that I suspect it is very much alive. In fact, more printed books are produced each year than the year before. Soon there will be a million new titles published worldwide each year. A research library cannot ignore this production on the grounds that our readers are now digital natives living in a new information age. If the history of books teaches anything, it is that one medium does not displace another, at least not in the short run. Manuscript publishing continued to thrive after Gutenberg, blah, 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 blah. And which another point it was reminiscent of was this I heard on National Public Radio, if I'm allowed to say it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And
they don't compete with us. You're not going to hear this on
the NPR. It was the Radio Lab. It was a little short take by the Radio Lab guys.
Anyway.
Yeah,
okay.
You know the Radio Lab guys anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said that no tool has ever been invented that is currently still not in use. And that was amazing. Well, everybody think about it.
No tool has been invented.
And so, in the same sense, I would say that no book has been published that's still you know, is not around in some fashion we would hope, except for the ones that have deteriorated.
Somewhere.
Anyway, so books continue to be made at alarming rates because knowledge is speeding. I mean, you know, look at the way our world has densified. So the production is like mad. That's what's going. Everything is going too fast. Too much produced in too short a time. Let the planet recover, folks. Well, anyway, that is...
Let our brains recover.
Well, so the information explosion begets more printed matter as well as digital. And lots of digital is no question, and lots of media and multimedia, absolutely. But it's still printed, prints tons and tons of stuff.
So when you meet with librarians or library administrators or deans or...
Right, right. All of the above, yes.
Yeah. Are they talking about housing the books or are they talking about integrating the...
All of it.
The technology with the meeting spaces, with the...
All of it. They talk about all of it because it's all really real.
It's not an answer I was looking for.
Well, they...
All of it's the like,
only,
yeah.
The only controversial thing I have, which I thought of, is that I'm now being asked to design a new high school library, private high school library, that has... It started in as having no books.
Right.
And I finally said, well, how about art, architecture, and photography, and that kind of stuff? And
what, being books?
Well, yeah, because in the size and the printed resolution you can get in those high-quality books,
sure,
you just can't find that online anywhere.
No.
No. Not
in, no, the digital...
Not in the way you need it. Maybe the, someday you will, but...
The digital clone of...
Anyway, the point...
Mapplethorpe.
The point is, this is going to have very few book stacks,
It's going to be like 3 gigabytes if you take a silver-based photograph and really digitize it to the resolution of silver nitrate prints.
Yeah, it's amazingly
is huge.
Yeah.
So, in a way, books are incredibly compact.
Yeah.
Composed with, compared with, the digital content.
And also,
so
right now, economically, they say, I mean, this is all kind of tedious facts, but they say that, libraries say that it's more expensive to keep maintaining subscriptions to the book and purchasing ebooks, which have restrictions, and they won't let an ebook, you buy an ebook, and they won't let you give it to anyone, of course.
So it's easier just to buy the book.
And so if you buy it as a library system, you're limited into how many people can actually borrow it at the same time, in effect. So, and for how long as well.
Yeah.
It's a license.
Right.
A use license.
Whereas a book...
well, you own it forever.
I can give it to you. I can lend it
to
you.
That's right. I can swipe it from you, or you can swipe it from me.
So you sent me... really interesting link to npr.org/monkeysee. Why the next big pop culture wave after cupcakes? Remember
the
cupcake thing? Might be might be libraries. July 20th, 2010 by Linda Holmes. And she said that... a local news story skeptically questioned whether local libraries are necessary, which set off a firestorm, a counterpunch by the Chicago Public Library Commissioner that got support from as far away as The Guardian.
I thought it might be your old neighborhood, in fact.
I was and am... a child of Chicago, it's true. Born at 3420 North Lakeshore Drive, yeah. Anyway, what was really cool for this blogger was that librarians
Where's
get...
that Lincoln Road up there?
And it's Lakeshore Drive. It's along the lake.
No, I know, but up at Lincoln Road or wherever it was?
Lincoln Avenue.
Lincoln Avenue.
Lincoln...
Is that 2240?
No, I was at 3400 and north, across from the Belmont Harbor.
Right, I know what that is.
Where they have boats and stuff and grass. And
yeah, yeah.
My earliest recollections are...
Yeah, I looked for apartments there.
Yeah, when you were in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. Nice place.
Yeah, yeah. We could tell tales, but we won't go there.
No, what was in Chicago stays in Chicago.
We don't want to talk about Mises' grandson.
No, we did all that stuff.
All that stuff, yes. Librarians fight. They know stuff. They're green and local. They give you things for free. They're open to the public.
All right, all right.
And there's a level of goodwill. I mean, all these things mitigate in favor
communal goodwill.
Of having a communal, local, green center that's aggregating information
Thank
that
you,
people
Andrew
can
Carnegie,
go to.
Because before that, there weren't that many, just a few. There were a few, though, like Cooper Union.
So what I intuit here...
Ba-da-bum. Go ahead. You intuit.
Are you from Brooklyn?
Yes, and still am. And you still are, and we are in Brooklyn. Thank you very much. Is this time for a commercial break?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I'll soon be moving to, I can't say to Brooklyn. I will be saying to Brooklyn because when I was a boy growing up in the outskirts of Chicago, I always imagined how life would be better if I'd lived in Brooklyn.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, now you got it.
Yeah, and it's time for me to move back to New York, and I think that what I can afford is a nice apartment on Amity Street in Cobble Hill.
Ooh.
Or is it Carroll Gardens?
We'll be neighbors. We'll be neighbors.
Yeah, I can afford that. It's time for me to move back. But what I'm hearing is that the institution of libraries is a kind of retrograde reaction against... Yeah, every man, woman, and child for him or herself, you know, with your personal PDA or laptop or desktop, you can get it on your own, but if you can have a nexus of information exchange, that's the, as they say in Britain, that's the brief. For a library, for a public library.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying yes?
Yes, if you can get it that way. But it's hard to get that. You get it online, and I think it's a component that's added. But it's apparently in these communities, the libraries, you know, expanding into Starbucks, coffee shop.
That might not be so
museums,
bad.
Museums, arts theaters.
Might not be so bad if
complexes
you could go and
that
have...
are like the town hall kind
yeah,
of information.
Well, that might not be so
tech.
Bad if
I was
you could.
Just saying about media tech kind of.
I mean, because
thing.
I read the comments to this blog posting, and one person said, "I'd rather be at, reading a new book, which I'm not going to buy, at." Barnes & Noble than being at my local library because when I'm done with glancing through it, I can put it down and go to the cafe. So what you're suggesting...
Well, I mean, it's happened. It's already happened. Yeah, lots of libraries
that,
have this stuff now.
That,
make it more comfortable.
Community libraries can be a place where you can take a book and you can...
Yeah, it's happened for years.
Go all Mooney and go and have a latte and just dream a little bit. You know, you can have your book of love and
chill,
you can just go and chill.
Chill and discover Frank Lloyd Wright or...
Electronic
a
book
circuits.
By Barbara Kinsolver telling you all about all the ins and outs of love. Jack, could we...
So it's about a place to chill.
Roll the next.
Place to chill.
Long boring. No one can lift the damn thing. It's full of charts and facts and facts. figures and instructions for dancing, but I love it when
Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network, talking about libraries, books, books of love, books online with J. Cole Spector, architect and designer of many, many, many libraries here and there across our land. How do we integrate? Oh, Lord. How do we...
Heaven help us.
How do we integrate the Codex with the... Digitex. I mean, we've got hard copy.
Physically, you're talking physical, planning-wise?
We're talking about the physical materiality of a thing called a library, which is a place that we go to.
Yeah, well...
We got a library card.
Yeah, it's no different than it's always been if you think of all the great models, even, you know...
Well, you got some people looking at
Michelangelo's great.
You got some people looking at screens all day, and they just stay in their seat while they're watching.
So you use the books to define space, to ring the space, to be in a separate room from the space,
yeah,
and to get access or not to allow access into the closed stacks, which is also very common, and to be in a reading room so that the precious material is brought to you.
Stop. Yeah. What you're saying is that the digital world is more like the scholar sitting at the table in that big reading room at the New York Public Library, the main branch.
Yes, yes.
Where you put in the call slip.
For sure.
And you tell them where you're sitting and they bring it to you.
And do you think that guy could do that from home with his cat and his baby and his blah, blah, blah? So he needs a refuge.
No, but those people are
just sitting.
Those people are not moving around. You don't bump into them.
Absolutely not.
They don't ever say, hey, check out when you're in the,
They might, though.
Mysterious department.
No, they do. They actually do. They do. Because these days it's different.
Even though it's digital,
they still talk to each other. Yeah, that's noisier these days. There's more.
Even though they're just staring.
Well, they're
at
lonelier too. I'm serious.
they're lonelier than the people in the old days who had books.
And they crave the interaction, and that's why Starbucks is so successful.
And that's why the people are at the library, because they're lonely.
Well, they got to merge Starbucks and the library, and they've been doing that. They've literally been doing that. They've tried to create a place. I mean, Starbucks or Barnes & Noble has this sort of. And even Barnes & Noble is having trouble these days because of the virtual world. But, you create a place.
Out.
Yeah, but Borders never really created the place the way Barnes & Noble did. You know,
they didn't have enough random chairs in the stacks.
I have no idea why.
Yeah,
but
well, no, they didn't.
Is that the reason?
Well, I think that's the reason.
It
I'm just saying.
It wasn't as comfortable.
I'm just saying from...
They should have reduced stacks and added chairs.
What's the word? Epistemological or just looking at what I saw?
Empirical.
Yes.
Empirical is the word.
Yeah. Well, it's a word.
Anyway, yeah, I think... I think it's merging. You know, the technology now is even getting smaller. I mean, for a while there, it was managing the change in technology. which manifests itself different size machines, different kinds of accessories, different kinds of things, I mean, to physically accommodate, which sure. led to certain flexibility solutions.
But we're going around and around and around and around.
Well,
and
but
we
the books are still used as elements. Even in Cool House's Seattle library, the books are an element.
Rem Cool House of OMA.
Right, an element that forms a hovering cloud, the same way it does in our closed stack library, except there you're allowed in the stacks, but it is the stacks. And the rest of the library is very interactive, open, friendly, almost a marketplace of ideas kind of place.
So what you're seeing is that as library design moves forward, there are books and there's the screens.
There's always been books. What I'm saying is there's always been that. And in what's different...
What you're saying is the scholars of old days with the call slips were like the people glued to their screens in their little carrel, looking at online stuff.
I wouldn't go that far. I think it's a different experience, but that's okay.
I'm just trying to find something that we can visualize because, you know, it's radio. It's like,
well, you still have books. You're still going to store books, and so you still have that as an issue in a library.
So you think books
except for. Like I'm being asked now to virtually,
You think books are not going to go away?
I don't think they're going to go away. I think they're going to be...
You don't see Harvard digitizing all their books, making it all available digitally, getting rid of the stacks, getting rid of the Dewey Decimal System?
I think the whole world would have to go to a digital publishing system. And from what I gather, that's not happening. In other words, a lot of stuff is being printed that's not really digitally available in mm-hmm. the same way that ebooks are. And it's a matter of distribution and that kind of crazy stuff that always gets in the way, the sort of organization of things.
Right.
Access to information.
So we're not...
even the readers you have now for digital books are all different. They all
and they're all limited
ways.
Because they don't give you the... experience.
I think ebooks are here to stay. They certainly are important for certain things, and I think they'll continue to gain in importance. And but libraries, even if books disappear, which they can, the books that are needed for research purposes could be kept in common places. And in fact, many institutions are doing that now. They're sort of sharing common storehouses for the books because the spaces they have are becoming more and more precious for people to interact with.
Well, that happens. That happens in the world of architecture.
But it's still staying as the library for now.
Library's got most of the architecture books, like basically in the world, and then the other architecture schools. Avery Library at Columbia, has got the world's largest architectural collection. And you can request an actual book, and so they're sharing around in that way. But, my concern is, are we blinded by our technology?
I think it's just we're always blinded by the new technology.
The
book was the codex, the book, because we know it is called a codex as opposed to a scroll.
Right.
And
but then there's the next thing, Digitex.
But we don't know what that is yet.
We've got the codex.
We know it's here, but we know there's these flat screen things. Are they going to stay like that, or I'm going to have my eyeglasses and my sunglasses project the thing onto me with varying degrees of translucency as a background? I don't know.
Right.
Am I going to
walk
around?
In the modern world, the only scroll that really...
is it just going to float in front of me in iridescent letters and in my vision, somehow.
Well, maybe.
And people say, what are you looking at? And I said, I'm reading. Can't you see?
So, Quinn, can we extrapolate anything from the experience of moving from the scroll, which in the modern Western world, the only scroll text is
your tribe.
It's your tribe.
Torah?
Yeah.
No, there's lots of them out in the East. It's the scrolls of the East and the Torah. China and Japan, they have all ancient scrolls.
To this day?
I don't know. I don't know for a fact, but right. I know they store
everybody
they store
had scrolls,
things.
But yeah. In modern life.
No, but it was.
We got
was
Torah.
A, I mean, the Codex was.
And
a,
then we've got Codex, yeah. Right, which is the book. And then what comes next is the Digitex. Yeah.
And kiss your ass goodbye at the same time.
Well.
Kiss. It seems so fragile. And it seems.
Very fragile.
Yeah, it seems so fragile. Almost seems.
So what I wanted to know was, are books going away? And you say no.
Well, that's what the experts say. This is
the librarians.
The current head of libraries at Harvard writing in this. I assume he's not throwing a curveball at us, but and it's a current issue of
you're
New
assuming
York
that
Review
he's not
books,
just
or,
looking
or one
for
within the last year, let's say.
He's not looking for job security because he's tenured.
I don't think so.
So therefore,
yeah, no,
he
yeah, he, this guy is like the head librarian of the world, almost. You know, he's up there.
We salute Harvard.
So he said, "This the output is increasing," which you have to understand. Every output, the population is booming. We're consuming everything. We're producing more of everything, including books, even though they're old fashioned and maybe on their way out. They're still being produced.
So if you were to suppose...
For most public libraries, I don't think you need too many books, actually, for what people are interested in public libraries for. They're going to change into...
You think the public libraries should get rid of their codexes?
They've already done that. If you go into most public libraries, you'll see huge multimedia sections.
I have a point to make real quickly. This is Jack.
Yeah.
And in all my time here at Heritage, we've had plenty of authors on. Not one, to my recollection, has promoted an ebook on this network.
Whoa.
There you go, Curtis. How about that?
Jack, you astound me. Well, I've just been fed a load of crap.
No, you just believe in the e-optimist. You're an e-optimist.
No, I'm an e-pessimist.
You're I just read this some article about the ever-betters and the never-better, about technological culture, and what it's doing to everybody.
Well, I've been
race,
blinded by
including
science.
Libraries. What has
Jack,
it done
I'm going
to
talk
libraries?
Over the outgoing speakifying.
And libraries, we're not immune. Nope.
Well, I really wanted the track before that, but that's all right.
Oh, that's digital technology I just heard.
Yeah, she blinded me with science. Thank you.
Cool.
I don't want to be blinded by science to believe that only ebooks will be our future. If you could bring this down a little bit, that would be great. Thank you. This has been Burning Down the House, 20th March 2011, with Jake Allspector, architect and designer of libraries. This is
fun.
Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. Jake had a few parting words to say about being blinded by science.
Oh, was I?
I thought so.
Well, I have been blinded by science, and we continue to be blinded by science. We just have to
but
wear
what
better sunglasses and be cool.
But what we've discovered is that... The Codex is not going away. Thank you for listening.
That's
keep
what they
the faith.
Me.
We've been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Keep the faith. Burning Down the House, the after party. Jack.
Hello.
Tell me.
Go, Jack.
Every author who comes here says, what?
They tell us who published their book, they bring a copy of their book, and they tell us where we can buy their book.
Well, I just keep hearing that you're like, the book is dead, man. But you're telling us that, and Jake is telling us that it's not dead. I don't know what I mean. It's like I'm up in
here. There's more. There's like books, and then there's e-books, and they're going to be two different things, I think. Really?
Yeah, but I mean, we had Duo Dickinson here on like a few weeks
ago.
Some
will be the same.
And he's telling me that his e-book is more important somehow than his book.
And why did he think that?
Well, they were telling him that the interactive...
He might be part of that e-world. I'm saying we're not going to stifle the e-book. It's not going to disappear.
Right.
It's here to stay. But it's going to be a totally different thing than the regular book.
But Duo...
And the regular book will just keep going, like all tools, are still around, man.
I mean, when cassettes came out, or 8-tracks for that matter, vinyl was supposed to be dead, and then CDs came out, and vinyl was supposed to be dead, and MP3s, the same thing, and I, myself, still buy new records on vinyl.
You buy vinyl?
I do. But I'm a DJ as well, but people still buy vinyl, even in... Tower Records, or no, Tower Records isn't there anymore.
Yeah,
but Best Buy. I see Best Buy still shelves vinyl.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Otherwise, you'd have to go to the place like Academy Records on 18th Street or something on the West Side. But no, but I've been told that if you don't publish an ebook with all the hyperlinks and all the enriched content, that you can't published the book. That's what Duo told me.
In what field?
Right, that's a good question.
In what field are you talking about?
He was doing an architecture book, Dr. Allspector.
Well, but that's like a very limited publishing field.
Right, and there's this music business book that's pretty essential for people trying to navigate those waters, and I would probably opt for the ebook version of that for the simple reason that they're going to give you PDFs of all the forms you'll need, and a bunch of other digital resources come along with it. So,
but you could put those, as hard copy, as addenda in your book, and people could, photocopy it and blah blah blah. Right.
Yeah, I think it's the application, though. If you're on your computer and you want to jump right to something else, and you're already putting music on the internet,
it's a different experience.
So, what you're suggesting, Jack, is that the content of the book dictates its format forward.
Yeah.
Certain things have to be digitally published and other things.
Well, certainly if you want to see motion pictures,
Sure.
We haven't done the... but maybe it's coming. Maybe we're going to get, sensitive paper that'll be LED paper.
or a new...
No, they're working on it. They're actually working on it. I mean, you can imagine, if they can miniaturize the circuitry.
Sure.
And print it onto... Well, they print stuff onto these things now, film. So it's just a matter of printing onto your paper and finding a medium, and then it'll be like a book, and then you can... hit it
like a book that's like a flip book, but
I don't know,
not a flip book,
but maybe you don't even have all the pages. I don't know, it's just soft. I don't know, maybe. And some people say actually it's scroll, because I read a science fiction story once where it was a scroll that you would just unscroll like a wand,
there was the movie,
and there's your screen.
Wow,
that's cool.
And then I don't know what the interface was, but I guess it was a mind interface. I don't know.
Well, thank you both for the experiment in the after party on Burning Down the House. I hope you can post this to the site.
We're still rolling. And I'll go on record and say that I don't think the Kindle is the answer.
I don't either.
No.
The Kindle ain't the answer.
I hope that proves to be true years from now.
Keep the faith. Keep listening. Thank you for listening to Burning Down the House here on Heritage Radio Network. Jack Inslee is our executive producer and engineer and tagger. Been here on 20th March with Jake Allspector.
Howdy, howdy.
Keep the faith.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Momofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Boltley of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of Be Our Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.